Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. I have a couple of questions to kick off today's show. Are you an overwhelmed procrastinator? Maybe a frustrated overachiever or a recovering perfectionist? Or maybe you're a mix of all three. Well, my second guest today freely admits that she's recovering from all three behavior patterns herself. Sam Bennett's new book is Start Right Where You Are, and we'll share how little changes can make a big difference in your life. But first, if you have a voice in your head, and I'm sure most of us have, reminding us that you're never quite good enough, therapist and renowned meditation teacher Mark Coleman joins us, and he's going to help us understand that voice and free ourselves from our inner critic. As an executive coach and founder of the Mindfulness Institute, Mark delivers mindfulness training to organizations worldwide. His new book is Make Peace with Your Mind: How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. Mark Coleman, welcome.
Thank you so much. Lovely to be here.
And it's lovely to have you here. And I think it's actually very timely, given the current state of the energy around us at the moment is a little chaotic, we'll just leave it at it's a little chaotic right now, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And there's a lot of people thinking what I should have done and could have done differently and better to have only influenced a different outcome. And here we are with the mess of life, as always.
And so we've got to take control of ourselves, because that's about all we can control.
Right? It's true. It's clearly the bigger picture is seemingly out of our control, for sure.
So you've written this book called, and I know you've written other books too, but this one is called Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. And I think this is a huge thing. I've seen so many people struggle with this themselves. I myself have struggled with my voice, but I want to just listen, first of all, or share with our listeners how you became involved in meditation, because you say as a young man, you were a punk rocker, you were filled with rage, and at some point you realized you were turning that rage inward on yourself.
That's right. I was living in London. I was going to college. I'm from England, and was an angry, confused man, as many people are, and I thought the problem was out there. And until I discovered meditation, I sort of stumbled on it by accident in the East End of London. And I was suddenly given this experience of, wait a minute, you can actually turn that attention inwards and look at your own mind and what's going on inside and realize actually so much of our own strife and anguish and pain is really self-created. And I also got to see how harsh and critical I was with myself and how painful it was to be treating myself so judgmentally and unforgivingly. And so the tools that I learned, the practices of meditation, of mindfulness practice, of loving kindness practice, were really two keys that account for threading through my life, giving me a sense of well-being and balance and clarity, which I'm internally grateful for.
Yes, yes. And it's taken you off in this whole direction. You've built a whole career from this.
Yes,
which is
surprisingly.
Really, yeah, it's quite impressive. So one thing I read that I loved, you said that you learned to navigate life's inner and outer storms. You needed two essential skills, awareness and compassion. And you said they are like wings of a bird without which flight is impossible. So talk to us a little about why those two skills are so important, awareness and compassion.
Right. So awareness, which comes from the practice of mindfulness, is really the simple ability to be present and aware of your experience, of yourself and others. And that awareness is what allows us to know intimately our mind, our emotions, our reactions, and the ways that we actually cause a lot of pain and suffering for ourselves, and the ways that we can also find peace and well-being, including illuminating the critic and its pain and how to work with it. But that's, I found, not enough in that, you know, often we're dealing with life's challenges, whether it's the election craziness or our personal challenges or with our kids or, you know, all the various dramas that we experience as human beings. And if we're not able to be with that with kindness, with a sense of compassionate care, then that awareness can be a little cool. And it's the love that's embodied in compassion that allows us to hold and care for and manage ourselves and each other in those difficult times. So I found that both of those are really important, that you need that clarity of awareness, but you also need to approach what yourself and each other in life with kindness. It makes the whole thing really possible.
I want to look at a study that you cite in the book. It's The Power of Awareness. It was done by Harvard Medical School. And they discovered some really surprising results about the effects of not paying attention. They tracked several thousand people, you say, over a period of weeks, checking in by phone throughout the day and asking them three questions. So could you talk to us about that study and what the primary findings were? Because they're quite amazing, I thought.
Yes, no, it is a fascinating study and one that's been cited a lot. Basically, as you said, they track these people over several weeks and they ask them three questions. What are you doing? Are you present to what you're doing? And how do you feel? And they collated all these hundreds of thousands of data points. And the summary was that people were, on average, not present to what they were doing, not paying attention to what they were doing, 46.9% of the day, which is basically half the day people weren't present to what they were doing. And then surprisingly, the second finding, which was responded to the third question, how do you feel? People consistently felt less happy when they weren't present to what they were doing, even if what they were doing, the task, was something we would call mundane, like doing the dishes, cleaning the house, walking the dog. That the study showed that when we're present to any activity, it actually increases a sense of well-being and happiness. So this is an interesting finding, given that if we spend half of our day not present, and that's actually detrimental to our well-being, then we're really doing ourselves a disservice, which is why the practice of mindfulness, I think, is taking off, because our devices and technology is certainly contributing to less awareness, less being present, and therefore that multitasking, constantly partial attention, split brain is actually not a very satisfying place to live.
Right. And what a waste of life, because you actually put some, you said if we sleep 8 hours a day and we're not present for half of our waking hours, by the time we're 60, we've only been awake and present for 20 years of our life.
Right. I know. No wonder life flies by, because we've been supposed to be.
Right. So the key takeaway from this is, whatever you're doing, give it your full attention, whether we're cleaning the house or walking the dog. And that's something we can train ourselves to do, you say.
Yes, very much so. There's, you know, this training that's been developed for thousands of years, starting in India, across Southeast Asia, and now coming to the West, and now studied by Harvard and all medical schools around the world, have clearly shown that the awareness is trainable through mindfulness practice. And it takes very little time, actually, to begin developing that muscle of awareness. It can start with as little as 5 to 10 minutes a day, where we're learning simply to focus our attention on the breath, for example. And when we do that consistently, in the same way that when we go to the gym consistently, it develops our physique, in the same way we can learn how to harness that power of attention. And we can also support it by simply not multitasking. So when we're driving, we just drive. Or when we're having a conversation, we're not texting. Or when we're having dinner, we just eat. And so all those times that we're bringing attention, conscious attention to what we're doing, we're actually strengthening mindful awareness. And we're also supporting our sense of well-being and satisfaction.
Yeah. I was reading your book, and I caught myself running out the door the other day with four different bags, my gym bag, one a Project A bag, Project B bag, and because I didn't want to have to come back to the house. I was, you know, making a circuit there. But I thought, you know, imagine if I had to add to this children and their bags and other stuff. I mean, the dog goes too. Yes, he goes everywhere. So it's a lot of stuff that we're juggling all day long.
Yes, indeed.
I want to talk about the inner critic, but I think we'll go to break just a little early so we can just really dive into that and I don't have to interrupt us midstream on that. My guest is Mark Coleman. His new book is called Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we will be right back with you. Please stay tuned.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
It's me, your heart. High blood pressure is serious, and if you think I'm just going to keep ticking away, you're wrong. I can quit whenever I want, but I like my job. Just treat me better. Maybe we can do some exercise on occasion? After all, we're in this together.
Don't let your heart quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair, host of Conversations Live, heard Mondays at noon and Fridays at 6 a.m. KKNW is running its annual listener survey right now. This is a great opportunity for you to tell station management exactly what you want from KKNW. You can tell us about your favorite shows, your likes, your dislikes, the kind of topics you'd like to hear about, and the type of guests you'd like to hear from. Your input really does help shape the future programming of the station. And as host of Conversations Live, it helps me produce better shows and give you what you want. When you fill out the survey online, you also have a chance to win a great prize. Just go to 1150kknw.com and click on 2016 Listener Survey. You could win $400 in gift certificates to Quinault Beach Resort and Casino at Ocean Shores and $100 in gift certificates to the Melting Pot Restaurant. Go to 1150kknw.com and tell us what you think. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, bringing you topics ranging from meditation to conservation, business and careers to health and wealth.
Easy on the ears, good for the soul. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Mark Coleman. He's a senior meditation teacher at Spirit Rock Meditation Center, an executive coach, and the founder of the Mindfulness Institute, which brings mindfulness trainings to organizations worldwide. And he's joining us today via Skype. And we talked in the first part about the importance of awareness and compassion. And I really want to dive into now, since your book is called Making Peace with Your Mind, how mindfulness and compassion can free you from your inner critic, into that inner critic. Something many of us have. It's very painful for many people. I'm wondering, Mark, I did read in the book that you said occasionally you come across people who have managed to tame that permanently, but I'm thinking maybe it's something more that you manage rather than get rid of totally.
Yes, exactly. I think the goal that I wish for people is they have, just like with anything, the key is in our relationship to experience. And so the critic may or may not go away. The habits of thought, you know, tend to live a life of their own. But what's important is whether that critical voice has a negative impact. And I've certainly seen both in myself and others how we can come to basically have a quiet disinterest in that voice. So we'll hear it. It will chime in at its usual predictable places, like when we mess things up or we're late or we don't perform or we get judged. You know, the critic will come on cue and give us a barrage of criticism. And the more that we can just be simply disinterested in the voice and in its content, then we can can be actually quite free from it. So it's really just learning to live with it and not give it the authority and the attention that we normally do.
Right. And you say, you know, one might argue, well, just tune it out. But you say that's not very effective because the less we're aware about judging thoughts, the more likely we are to let them chirp away and the more likely they are to start eroding our sense of self-worth, our sense of value.
Right, which is why in the book I talk about the ground is mindful awareness. We first need to know when the judgments are happening. And for most people, the judgments are so common and so familiar and old that it's just part of the furniture. And so the first step is actually distinguishing what's just regular thoughts, what's a discriminating thought, and what's a judging thought that has a negative tone to it that makes us feel bad about ourselves. And that's what we need to be clear about, which of the judging thoughts actually have a negative impact on how we feel about ourselves, because that's what we want to learn to disidentify from and find space from.
So I wonder if you'd give me an example, maybe you'd share some of yours that with us that you had to deal with and how you quietly showed them you were disinterested. I love that phrase. Next time Mike comes into my head, I'm going to tell him I'm quietly disinterested.
Good. So for an example, you know, I imagine a lot of your listeners, as do I and you, lead busy lives. And so I have a very full life. And I'm often, as you just mentioned, running out the door with bags and trying to find my keys and my wallet and get to my venue on time to teach. And one of the ironies is I have regular evening classes and I'm often a little close for time and not quite sure where either my keys or my wallet or my phone or something is. And I notice the critic will pipe up, "Oh, look at Mr. Mindfulness, Mr. Mindfulness teacher." And I'll just retort with, "Oh, Mr. Mindfulness wins the day again," as in I just make a joke of it. You know, and I find humor actually the most effective strategy. When we can laugh at ourselves and we can laugh at the critic and laugh at the humor of the situation, here I am, Mr. Meditation Mindfulness guy who has lost his keys again. And I can just see the humor, there's the humanness in that. We all lose our keys or lose things or a little late or don't time things at times. And so if I can find the lightness in it, then I can smile and it's not a big deal.
Right. I wanted to talk about humor because you discuss that in the book. You say in your workshops you make a point of bringing humor and levity to the subject of the inner critic. You say you often tell a story about how you just can't win with the critic. I wonder if you'd share that with us.
Yes. So the critic takes many disguises. It can be like a, you know, friendly coach, or it can be a rigid taskmaster. So an example could be, maybe you've decided to get on a fitness routine, so and that alarm goes off at 5:30 in the morning so you can get your run in the morning before work. And the alarm goes off and you're tired. And the thought comes up that's sort of from the friendly coach. Like it says, "You know, you just listened to this podcast about sleep and it's really important to sleep. So why don't you just give yourself a break and sleep in, do the exercise tomorrow." And so you do that and you wake up at 7:30 and it's, you know, you're late for work. And then the taskmaster comes online and says, "You lazy slob, how come you never do your exercise? You never follow through with commitments. You may as well just give up on life." And so that's, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. And that's why there's a wonderful line, I think it was from Dustin Hoffman, who said, Walter Raleigh, it's in the book. It says something like, "Neither court the critic's smile nor dread his frown." Because either way, if the critic's being nice to you, you know at some point you're going to get the slap. So really, we want to have a disinterest in either voice and find our own way to decide and discriminate and choose.
Right, right. I love that. So you say that you hear from a lot of people that they're afraid they'll never accomplish anything if they stop listening to that inner critic, that they feel that inner critic is driving them. And if they just stop listening to it, they're not going to accomplish anything. What do you say to them?
Yeah, and I you know, I totally empathize with that point of view, because we've come to be so given the critics such a lot of bandwidth in our life and our mind, and it is the driver for many of us to get out of bed or get to work or accomplish a project on time. But the downside of that is it's not a very happy way to live. We may accomplish our goal, but we've done so with sort of being, you know, derided and chided and pushed, and it's tense and it's gripped and it's somewhat unpleasant. And you know, what I've learned and listened to in my own experience is, you know, I have many projects and demands and deadlines, and I can accomplish them without being mean to myself or pushing myself with that negative tone, and just simply look at what needs to be done and make choices, and find I can do that in a much more relaxed way. The problem with listening to the critic is we feel tense, we feel not good enough if we don't do it, and it blocks out any other opportunity for creativity because the mind's a little tight and rigid. And we all have things like conscience and healthy desire and aspiration and motivation that are much more healthier places to come from than this sort of, you've got to do it, you've got to do this thing, otherwise you're useless.
Right, right. And you make a very good point. There's a chapter in the book called Reality Check. Are your judgments really true? Just because this critic is, our inner critic is telling us something, doesn't make it true.
Doesn't make it, sorry, I missed that last word.
It doesn't make it true.
Right, right. We often think that whatever goes through our head is true. And one of the things I ask people to do is write down their list of judgments and then share it with someone you trust, someone who's not going to laugh at you or poke fun at you for your judgments, but just to see, is this really a true perspective on who I am? And I can guarantee that most people will say most of the time, the way that we judge and evaluate ourselves is very harsh, critical, and doesn't at all reflect the positive qualities we have. It might focus on some of our faults, but doesn't give the true picture of who we are as a person.
Right. You have a lot to say about the power of love, befriending ourselves. Talk to us a little about the power of love, if you would.
Yeah, so many things to say. You know, the first thing is, you know, the critic is a very painful process, as you mentioned earlier in our discussion. And if we can't hold ourselves with care, then it's just doubly painful. You know, there's a quote from the book where I say, opening yourself to vulnerability is the first step in harnessing the power of love. And so, you know, we're vulnerable as human beings, and the critic is a painful thing that in some ways exposes our vulnerability to being hurt very easily. And I found that mindfulness being essential to know the critic and understand it, but the love is important to both hold ourselves as we would, you know, a loved one or a child who's been bullied or been beaten up or, you know, is suffering as we are with our critic. The love is like a salve. It soothes some of that pain. But also love is fierce, you know, just like a mother bear or a mother protecting her children. Right? Sometimes we're strong and there's fierceness, there's energy. And so often what's required with the critic is to say no, is to say, stop, this is not true, this is not helpful, not effective, leave me alone. So love has many different forms. It can be both soothing and calming, but can also be fierce and strong and self-protective. And we need all of those dimensions of love to take care of ourselves and work with the critical forces.
Mm. You have at the back of the book a segment called the Critic Toolbox, where you've got some great tools there to help us quell this voice. And I read that one of your favorite practices is to simply count your judgments as they come in. I'm thinking some of us would be counting all day long.
Yes, I know. Well, that's why it's sort of amusing. My one of my meditation teachers gave me that practice, and I was on a long retreat, and I was, you know, 281, 384, 697. And at some point, it just becomes ludicrous. And you see that it's one, just a bunch of thoughts, that they're repetitive. They're mostly saying the same old thing. And since it's such a lot of white noise, it's like, why would you watch a bad, you know, TV series on, you know, on HBO, you know, 50 times, but we do the same with our critic. We listen to the same old thing droning on. So I think counting them's, you know, a fun thing to do, you know, and anything that brings a little humor. Sometimes I enjoy exaggerating. Yes, I'm the worst person in the world. I'm the worst meditator or the least kind so-and-so. And again, it just makes a little light of it. Or sometimes I just say, thank you. You know, thank you for your opinion. Very interesting. Now, can you go bother somebody else?
Yes. I'm definitely taking the I'm mildly disinterested thing to heart.
Right.
Quietly disinterested. I'm definitely taking that away from our discussion today as other stuff. So we're almost right at the end of our segment. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Mark?
I think I'd like to leave you listeners with a message of hope that, you know, no matter how long we've had this critical pattern, which for some of us it's many years, many decades, we can begin in any moment to free ourselves from it when we bring awareness and clarity and we bring kindness and we stop giving it authority and attention and stop listening to it and instead actually try and focus on the positive things that we notice about ourselves and each other. And actually constantly giving ourselves a healthier reality check that we can really free ourselves in any moment from this pattern.
Lovely. Well, I really thank you for being with us today. The book is called Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. Mark Coleman is my guest. And Mark, I know you offer wonderful workshops. Where can people find out more about those and the book?
Yes, so I lead meditation retreats and wilderness courses, and the best place is to go to markcoleman.org, or you can go to mindfulnessintheworld.com, and you'll find information about my courses, my other books and teachings everywhere.
Thank you so much for being with us, Mark. Appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you. Delightful. Take care.
And again, my guest, Mark Coleman, the book, Make Peace with Your Inner Mind. And please do stay tuned. When we come back, we'll be joined by Samantha Bennett. And before we go, I want to just say very, very quickly here, there's a TEDx event coming up this Saturday. It's at McCaw Hall at the Seattle Center. It's TEDx Seattle 2016. And together, they're going to explore what is greater than through a day of ideas and experiences. TEDx Seattle 2016, this Saturday. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need. Whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Pause has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967 because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at pause.org or call 425-787-2500.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair airs live every Monday at noon. And now you can also catch the show during drive time at 6 a.m. every Friday. Hear from New York Times bestselling authors, innovative business leaders, cutting-edge health and wellness professionals, award-winning journalists, filmmakers, explorers, and adventurers. Tune in to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Mondays at noon Pacific time and Fridays at 6 a.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
This is Martha Norwalk, every Sunday morning beginning at 9 a.m. Thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage on Vashon Island, we cover the world of animals. This week, November 20th, by special request, it's Vet Sunday with our favorite animal world vet, Dr. Bill Burlingame. He is the expert on the best immune system support for both animals and humans. He uses a very balanced approach and is a wealth of information that you can tap for free. And Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 11.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Find our app in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store and take us with you wherever you go. Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Well, we have a great pairing with our first guest, Mark Coleman, who talked about The Inner Critic. We're joined now by Sam Benich, who's the author of Start Right Where You Are and Get It Done. We talked with her, I don't know how long ago it was, a couple of years or so ago, about the book Get It Done. She created the Organized Artist Company to help creative people get unstuck and achieve their goals. She's a writer, actor, teacher, and creativity productivity specialist who's counseled thousands of artists and entrepreneurs on their way to success. And today we're talking about Start Right Where You Are for Overwhelmed Procrastinators, Frustrated Overachievers, and Recovering Perfectionists. Sam Benich, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Vicky. Hi, everybody.
And I'm laughing because you say you're recovering from all three issues, as many of us are, right?
You can hear the hands raising all over. That's an overwhelmed procrastinator, frustrated overachiever, recovering perfectionist.
So wasn't always so great for you. It was like 19, 20 years ago, found yourself in a position where you weren't feeling all that great and you decided to make some changes yourself. So take us back there and what kind of prompted that change and how it led into what you're doing now.
Yeah, I found myself in this world where I was really busy. I was working really hard. Everybody told me I was doing a good job, but I wasn't really getting anywhere, and I felt like I was working harder and harder and harder and falling further and further behind. And it was really, I was really hurt and disappointed because I felt like, you know, I'm doing everything right. You know, I'm doing everything that everybody's told me to do, and including the whole follow your bliss and surrender and, like, you know, all the good advice.
Right.
And none of it was working. I was unhappy. I was depressed. I was broke. I was really kind of fed up with myself. And finally I realized that I had to stop waiting to feel happy in the future.
Big, big thing for many people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had it in my head, I think like a lot of people do, that there would come a moment like, okay, if I get this gig or if I make this amount of money or if I can get to this goal weight or, you know, if this person says something or this happens or that happens, that, like, then, you know, things will be okay. And they kept not really being very okay. And finally, I realized that I had the choice to start exerting power in every tiny moment to make myself, if not happy, I mean, happy is a little bit of an overrated word, I think, but peaceful, mm-hmm, and joyful and appreciative and grateful, and making these little teeny tiny shifts, these little moment to moment shifts ended up changing everything for me.
Mm. Well, we're going to get to those for sure. And we talked about Get It Done, which also was about procrastination, too, and creativity. But there's quite a significant difference between that book and this book. Tell us that difference in your own words, if you would.
Yeah, in some ways, Start Right Where You Are, the new book, is almost a prequel to the first book, to Get It Done. You know, the first book is Get It Done, From Procrastination to Creative Genius in 15 Minutes a Day. And it's very practical. Start Right Where You Are is practical too, but it's very much about project management. It's about how to get the stuff that matters to you out into the world. And I realized that, you know, if it wasn't actually okay with you that you get your creative work out in the world, or you were so stressed out and exhausted that you couldn't even contemplate getting your creative work out into the world, it didn't matter what tips or strategies I gave you, it wasn't going to help. So I needed to take a step back and say, okay, let's start with the inner game of creativity, the inner game of productivity. And it forced me to sort of really look at, like, what did I do that moved me from that frantic, exhausted place to this, you know, much less self-sacrificing, much more self-nourishing, a lot more laughter and a lot more prosperity place that I'm in now.
Well, there are 66 doable changes in the book. I'm wondering, when you started thinking about, you know, how do I get from A to B, was this something that was life-changing? Did you have that kapow moment, that aha moment that was like, okay, this is the key for me? Because it's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah, I think in terms of bringing the book to life, the big kapow moment was realizing that I could do it in 66 super tiny chapters. So there's chapters that are just a page or two long. You know, it's really easy to read, and every chapter has a little tiny action step. So the idea that I could use the format, the structure of the book itself, to underline the message of the book, which is that little changes can make a big difference. That's kind of where I went, oh, okay, I can do this book now. I know what this is. I know what this is.
Right. Well, I want to start with a couple of small ones, and then we'll take a quick break and come back and dive a little bit deeper into the book, because you start the book out with actually some of your favorites, because they're so simple to move to simple changes to move to make. Can't speak today. That would help. One of the simplest is simply get your cell phone out of the bedroom. I actually got all electrical stuff out of my bedroom, and it made a big difference, you know, when I didn't have the TV to flick on and stuff like that.
I completely agree. I think the bedroom should be an electronics-free zone. But if you can't get to there, just, yes, get the cell phone out of the bedroom and give yourself back the gift of waking up in the morning. That moment, you know, just like before you even open your eyes, and you're not anybody. You're not anybody's mom. You're not anybody's boss. You're not anybody's partner. Nobody needs anything from you. Like, that moment is so precious. And for the creative person and the sensitive person and the overworked person, that time, that minute or two, just waking up, it's a very fruitful time. Like, your brain does amazing things because you're kind of half in dream time, and, you know, you haven't woken all the way up yet. And this is when your mind can make amazing connections between things and really come up with fun solutions and ideas. And, you know, you sort of start to put things together in unusual ways. And just the pleasure of stretching and rolling over and cuddling and taking a second to ease into your day.
Right.
There's nothing happening on your phone that cannot wait for a couple of minutes.
Right.
While you give yourself back those moments, because otherwise, you know, you pick up your phone before your eyes are even open and you're immediately overwhelmed.
Yeah. I traveled recently with a group of people, and we were in kind of a dormitory situation. It was really weird. But I noticed in the morning that certain people would, before they even got out of bed, they'd reach their arm from under the covers and grab their cell phone. And it reminded me of chain smokers who reach their arms out and grab their cigarettes first thing in the morning. You know, it's like an unconscious thing. So I think that's a great thing to get.
Well, absolutely. And there's actually a lot of studies that talk about the endorphin hit that we get from a ping, from a message, is very similar to this kind of hit we get from nicotine. So it really is a physical addiction.
Yes, it really is. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll dive into the book a little more here and look at some of the strategies that Sam Bennett's put down. She's the author of Get It Done. Her new book is called Start Right Where You Are. And I love that. We don't have to be perfect. We can start right here. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Hi, I found a toy dinosaur over on the playground by Smith Street. It had this phone number on it, and, well, I just wanted to make sure the dinosaur made it back to its little owner.
Yeah, hi. I think I found your kid's stuffed animal near the swing set. Just want to call. I'm sure she misses it.
I know my son gets super attached to the smallest things, even a fire truck, and I'd be happy to drop it off. The toy was a little muddy, so I cleaned it up, and it's good to go whenever you're around.
When I found the little sippy cup, I just had to give you a call. It's for a kid, you know?
We'd do anything for kids. Yet 1 in 6 children in the U.S. struggle with hunger. Help end childhood hunger and give all of our kids the meals they need to grow. Learn how at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair, host of Conversations Live, heard Mondays at noon and Fridays at 6 a.m. KKNW is running its annual listener survey right now. This is a great opportunity for you to tell station management exactly what you want from KKNW. You can tell us about your favorite shows, your likes, your dislikes, the kind of topics you'd like to hear about, and the type of guests you'd like to hear from. Your input really does help shape the future programming of the station. And as host of Conversations Live, it helps me produce better shows and give you what you want. When you fill out the survey online, you also have a chance to win a great prize. Just go to 1150kknw.com and click on 2016 Listener Survey. You could win $400 in gift certificates to Quinault Beach Resort and Casino at Ocean Shores and $100 in gift certificates to the Melting Pot Restaurant. Go to 1150kknw.com and tell us what you think.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Get inspired every hour right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Sam Bennett. She's joining us via Skype. Her new book is called Start Right Where You Are for Overwhelmed Procrastinators, Frustrated Overachievers, and Recovering Perfectionists. So, Sam, I know that you give workshops and private coaching, and I'm guessing you run into a lot of people who are challenged with all three of these behavioral patterns all of the time. Is there something innate in their personality that makes this a way of life for them?
I think a lot of it comes, honestly, just from our desire to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to do well. We want our work to be noticed. We want to have people like us and approve of us and have our work matter. And sometimes that can stop us before we even start, because we think it has to be perfect inside of our mind before we even get going. Sometimes it gets stops us in the middle because we think, oh no, this isn't good enough, or we start to second guess ourselves. And sometimes it gets us right at the end when it looks like something might really be real. And then that's totally terrifying.
Right, right. So I want to talk about the word overwhelmed, because I'll be really honest, when I lived in California for many years, I never heard this people talking about this so much. But then we didn't have so much net activity as we do today. We weren't drowning in emails and texts and all that jazz. And when I moved up here, I ran into a couple of people who constantly were feeling overwhelmed. And you said we need to stop saying that. We're not overwhelmed. Talk to us about that, if you would.
Yeah, it's all, I agree. I didn't never used to hear this word very much either. And now I hear it constantly. And yeah, so I think step one is stop saying you're overwhelmed. Overwhelmed is a choice. To feel overwhelmed is a choice you are making. And it comes from a couple of different places, but part of it is the inability to differentiate between what's important and what isn't important. You know, when everything's just kind of coming at you equally,
right,
then you're going to feel overwhelmed. But knock it off. Like, stop saying you're overwhelmed and stop participating in this glorification of busy. You know, this endless game of overwhelmed, busy poker has just got to be dropped. Oh, I'm so busy. I have to do this and this and the other thing.
But
oh,
you're
really?
Not as busy as me.
You're not as busy as me. Here's how busy I am. We all get the same 24 hours in a day.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody gets more time than you get. So start getting a little more strategic about how you're using your time, because you do have time. People say, oh, I don't know how you write a book. How did you find the time? No, you have the time too. You know, you're just spending it on other things.
Right, right. So you have a chapter in the book called You're Not Overwhelmed, You're Overwrought. What's the difference?
I think especially for highly sensitive people, creative people, and just people with a lot of antenna, you know, we get we start to overthink things and have too many feelings about things and get so tied up into knots over everything that we become paralyzed and our own feelings overwhelm us. So to understand that's when you're overwhelmed because you're overwrought, you know, wrought is the past tense of work.
Right.
Right. Like wrought iron is worked iron. So to be overwrought is like you're overworking things inside of your mind. And to understand that's an emotional thing. You can handle that for yourself. That's not a scheduling problem.
Right.
That's a feelings problem.
Right. Right. So as we said earlier, there are 66 small doable changes in the book that can make a big, big difference in your life. One of them, I definitely want to talk about this because we've talked about completion before. And a lot of coaches, you know, want you to complete your list and get everything off your list before you do anything. You say it's overrated. So give us your version of that.
Yeah, completion is often overrated. You know, this isn't school. We're not Girl Scouts. We're not getting a merit badge for everything that gets finished. You know?
Right.
And sometimes things are valuable just for the process of doing them. You know, I started a journal, but I never finished it. Well, the action of journaling is not so that you have a complete journal at the end. That's not why we do it. You journal for the process and action of journaling. And if you reach a moment where that's not useful or helpful to you, then put it away. You could even throw it away. Like, you don't actually have to hang on to it. Things change, fads change, your ideas change, the things that interest you change. It's fine to get, you know, halfway through a needlepoint project and go, you know what, I'm just not that into this anymore.
Right. And that's a big strength, I think, to recognize, you know, when you're wasting your time, when you're spinning your wheels and doing something just because you've got to get it off your list here. I mean, it's different if your boss is telling you to do it. But I mean, many personal projects, I myself have had several boxes which I've actually gotten so far into and thought, this doesn't fit anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have the right to have the things in your life that are appropriate to who you are now.
Mm-hmm. And so this other one, I hear a lot of complaining, when you're around just talking with people in general and, but very little solution around that. So you say turn complaints into requests. So instead of complaining, request. How do we do that?
Yeah. So I want you mostly just to notice what an incredibly ineffective strategy complaining is. Complaining and nagging both. Like, they don't give you the result you want. They don't get anything done. And you don't really feel any better after you've done it. So, you know, set those strategies aside because they just don't work very well. Yeah. And instead, turn your complaint into a request. So rather than being upset because, you know, he left the wet towel on the bathroom floor again, look at what's actually like. If it's not important to him that the towel get hung up and it is important to you, then just go ahead and hang up the stupid towel.
Right.
You know, standing there and going, he never hangs up the towel. He never hangs up the towel. He never hangs up the towel. Right.
Yeah.
Because he's not hanging up the towel. That's not his bag. Or you can say, sweetheart, please hang up the towel. But to stand around grousing that the world is not the way you would like it to be isn't doing anybody any favors.
Yeah, it takes a lot more energy, actually, to complain than just bend down and pick it up, I think.
Yeah. And I was really raised that you weren't allowed to complain about something unless you had a suggestion about how to make it better.
Mm-hmm. That's not a bad thing, I think. So this one gave me a chuckle, but I also liked it. You say it's important that we have happy grown-up naked time. Tell us about that.
Happy grown-up naked time. Happy grown-up naked time is just what it
sounds like. Oh, my producer's raising his eyebrows.
Don't worry, this won't get too salacious. Because it's actually the opposite of that. It's about taking time, like maybe half an hour a week, to just lay around nude by yourself or with another adult, whatever works for you. It's not about having sex. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. A lot of people can't have sex. A lot of people don't want to have sex. A lot of people are too exhausted to have sex. This isn't about that. It's about the pure animal pleasure of skin on skin and having time to be close with one another or close with yourself. I mean, even right now, just hold your own hands. Put one of your hands, hold one hand with the other and just feel the warmth of your hand and the texture of your skin and the strength of your hand. And I'm noticing that I've got this little scar here from when I was 12. And, you know, just being present inside your own body.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a goal-free time. We're not trying to accomplish anything.
Right, right.
We're just trying to be with ourselves or with a partner if that's where you're at.
And touch is very important. I mean, psychologists tell us all this time, touch is very important. You know, if you can't hug a person, hug a dog or a cat or something.
Exactly, exactly. And really, even just touching yourself and in a non-sexual way, putting your hands on your face or your arms, it has an amazing biochemical effect. It does amazing things to raise your own self-esteem. There's a study about touch and how it will raise your body image. And I think it's just so often neglected.
Mm. One of the things that I think I've seen as very common in people who are successful in what they do is that they have a very strong sense of intuition. And, you know, I know I certainly was raised by grandparents and parents who always said, you know, what's your gut telling you? Trust your intuition. And you talk about this in the book and you talk about intuition killers. Let's look at what can kill our intuition and then a couple of things that can help ramp it up.
Exhaustion is a great
intuition. That will do it.
Stress will do it. Being hungry, angry, lonely, tired will do it. Second guessing yourself, too much input from other people will do it. And notice, you know, and we all have our own, you know, we have our own ways of subverting our own intuition. So in part, it's just starting to notice like, oh, what are the things I do when I'm really getting off track? You know, how do I know when my intuition is speaking to me and how do I know when I've turned it off?
Mm.
Sometimes I'll hear people say like, well, I can't think of anything. You know, I don't know what to do. I can't think of anything. What that tells me is they've actually have thought of a couple of things. Their inner wisdom, their intuition has actually thrown up a couple of suggestions, but their logical brain has gone, no, 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 that's not good enough. No, no, that will never work. No, no, we did that one time and that was stupid. No, no, no. And then, of course, your intuition crosses its arms, raises an eyebrow and goes, fine, you think of something.
Right. So going back to the inner critic we talked about earlier with Mark, we need to stop that judgment happening when we have that intuition coming up, because it's coming up for a reason, I believe. We're almost at the end of our segment. You talk in the book about tribe, the importance of having our tribe around us, something that's very topical right now. And it's something that I hear from many, many people. It's very difficult to find their tribe, whether they're looking for like-minded people or people with different opinions. It's very hard for some people to connect. Just a quick 30 seconds viewpoint on that, if you would, Sam.
Yeah, just understanding that your tribe is probably not your current family and friends. You know, they love you, but they want to keep you safe. And so you need to find people who share your values. That's really the core of it, is finding people who share your value system.
Excellent. And so the best place for people to find out more about you and your work, I think, correct me, is startrightwhereyouare.com.
Yes, that's all about the book. And there's a bunch of bonuses and all kinds of fun stuff.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. I appreciate your time, Sam. Good talking with you again.
Thanks for having me.
And my guest, Sam Bennett, author of Start Right Where You Are for Overwhelmed Procrastinate, How Little Changes Can Make a Big Difference for Overwhelmed Procrastinators, Frustrated Achievers, and Recovering Perfectionists. And again, you can find out more about Sam and the work she's doing at startrightwhereyouare.com. And I want to thank each of you for being with us today. Just a quick reminder that there's an event coming up this Saturday at McCaw Hall at the Seattle Center, McCaw Hall, this Saturday, November 19th. It's the TEDx Seattle 2016. And their theme this year is What is Greater Than? It's a day of ideas and experiences around what is greater than. It's all about community. And if you just Google TEDx Seattle 2016, that will come right up and you can take a look. They've got some great speakers, really great speakers. They always do, but I think this year they've got some really interesting ones. So I want to thank you for being with us today, and we'll be back next week. If you have questions or comments on today's show, you can find me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. You can find me at info@conversationslive, on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair, and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.